drive.
And I really truly believe that anybody can be successful. It just takes hard work.
You're about to embark on a journey where you're going to walk on a lot of glass knee thorns.
I believe that anyone who is a startup is absolutely privileged because they get to leave a legacy behind. They get to actually create something that makes a difference in the world.
Welcome to Season 3 of the WeStrive Podcast, brought to you by the WeStrive app, where we are the first marketplace for the personal training industry. Search through thousands of fitness plans from hundreds of certified trainers in the app, or sign up as a trainer at WeStriveApp.com. On this podcast, we interview entrepreneurs that are changing the world. We've had millionaire founders, top-level investors, and just some of the most inspiring people that you'll ever meet. Entrepreneurship is all about striving for greatness, and I hope the stories you hear on this podcast inspire you to go out and become a better version of yourself. Now, let's get to the episode.
We Strive.
Hey everyone, this week on the WeStrive podcast, we have Erica Lucas, who is one of the co-founders of Stitch Crew. She grew up in Mexico, had some extremely hardworking and bootstrapping parents. When she came to the US, she decided that she was going to be in Oklahoma. And she realized that Oklahoma has an incredible area for startups, but a lot of startups leave. So her and her husband created Stitch Crew. They'd done a lot of investing over the years, and what they wanted to do with Stitch Crew was be able to convince startups to stay in Oklahoma, provide an amazing ecosystem for them to thrive. And they're doing just that. They've partnered with the Oklahoma City Thunder to create Thunder Launchpad, and they've already helped 5 cohorts of startups. She's always looking out to see how she can help people, and she's already done a TED Talk. She's done dozens, probably hundreds of different pitches and speeches to help people, and I'm excited for you guys to hear her story.
Thank you, first of all, for having me. I know Farhash speaks very highly of you, and any friend of his is a friend of ours. So I'm Erica Lucas, one of the co-founders of Stitch Crew. We launched Stitch Crew about 3 years ago in an effort to support and connect startups in the middle of the country with capital. And then what we're mostly known for, particularly in our region, is because we do have a partnership with our local NBA team, the Oklahoma City Thunder, to run an accelerator program here locally. So that's me, and that's what we do.
We won't go too much into the OKC Thunder because I am a Seattle Sonics fan, and so that's a whole nother thing. But how'd you guys come up with the name Stitch Crew?
Yeah, so that I have to give all the credit for the name to Chris and his thesis behind it or his thought process behind it was we just really wanted to connect people with the resources and the networks that they otherwise lacked. So he got a hold of the word stitch and said, you know, we're really just stitching people together. So why don't we just call it Stitch Crew? So that's really how it came up. There's no other, you know, trade secret behind it. He gets all the credit for it.
And then Chris is your husband, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, so you and him are the co-founders of Stitch Crew?
Yeah. So we, it's so funny because we are a husband and wife operation, and we actually launched Stitch Crew because we came from very different backgrounds. So Chris is actually the entrepreneur in our family. And my background is in private investments, from foreign direct investment to private equity to now venture capital. And so he would come home and tell me the frustrations that he would see in the startup community and the disconnect between investors and founders. And I would come home and explain some of the frustrations that I would see from the investment side. So that's actually out of sharing those stories and those frustrations, we said, well, what if we created something where we are bringing both voices together and see if we can be additive to it. So there you go.
No, and that's incredible. And one big question here I want to ask is what makes you an entrepreneur? Like, what do you think about? And the answer is obviously you're an entrepreneur, but what about like your daily life and like how you approach things makes you an entrepreneur?
The roller coaster. So what makes me an entrepreneur? I mean, you know, I think is just another word. It really comes down to, we're here to be additive and to solve problems for a community that we deeply care about. As I mentioned, Chris is a founder. We've owned and operated our own companies. We had good companies and we had total flops. So we know what it feels like. And we also know what it feels like to get started. Everybody wants to be your friend when you're a successful entrepreneur. Not a lot of people want to really spend the time and effort when you're starting out, right? And you've yet to prove that success. So we've been there. We know what it feels like. And we feel like what makes us entrepreneurs now, although we don't really think ourselves as that, but what makes us that is that we're doing what most entrepreneurs do, and we're just solving problems and trying to figure out ways to add value on a daily basis.
Love it. Absolutely love it. And so we'll touch it more on the whole Launchpad and Stitch Crew in a sec, but I want to talk about your early life. So you grew up in Mexico. How long before you ended up moving to the US? And then we can touch on like what it was like growing up in like your city, and we'll touch on your family and how they were bootstrappers too and all that fun stuff.
Sure. So I actually came to the United States twice. This is my second time. So the first time I migrated here was with my mom and my sister when I was just a teenager. I think I was 13 or something like that. Didn't know a lick of English. So that was my first experience. But the second time, and the time I decided to stay here for good, was about 15 years ago. And I was actually visiting my mom for the winter, for Christmas break, and met my husband. And you know the rest of the story. Yeah. I couldn't convince him at the time to go back with me to Mexico. So I decided to stay, and we got married, and we now live here. Now he wants to go back to Mexico, and I want to stay here. So it's funny how things turn. But yeah, so that's 15 years ago. That's what brought me back to the States and kept me here.
Well, your English is incredible, and I think people, specifically, I feel like people that speak Spanish and then learn English don't get enough credit for being fluent in English. As like, if like I'm learning Spanish and if I became fluent in Spanish, I would get way more credit for some reason. Props to you. Your English is incredible. So what was it like growing up in Mexico? Like, were you in like a wealthy neighborhood, or like were your parents just like strapping entrepreneurs like yourself? Like, what was that like?
Yeah, no, I mean, I would say that we were, right in the middle. We had enough resources to get by, but I would definitely categorize my entire family, from my grandparents to my mother, as bootstrap entrepreneurs. So I grew up with my mom as a single parent, and luckily she had the help of both of my grandparents, and they were all entrepreneurs. So we lived comfortably in that we didn't, I never felt deprived of anything, and they made sure of that. But we were definitely not in a wealthy neighborhood or just had abundant resources. In fact, a lot of what gets me going every day in trying to help entrepreneurs that look more like my mom and my grandparents is that I grew up learning a lot about true bootstrap entrepreneurs, right? Entrepreneurs that don't have that access to networks or generational wealth or access to financial resources to get started. My grandparents and my mom didn't have any of those things.
Yeah. And I think that's honestly I'm definitely not in the same boat, but I mean, I'm closer to that end than to the whole VC and access and everything like that. And I think, growing up in a small town, it definitely forces you to learn a whole bunch of the things that you might have just been given. And again, I'm not in any way trying to compare myself to that scenario, but I know what you mean. It's cool to, see people that don't just get $1 million raised as soon as they start something, and they can actually like grow it and have to learn themselves.
No, 100%. And I think you're right. I mean, listen, we're in the middle of the country. 78% of venture capital is spent on the coast. One of the many reasons why we got started with Stitch Crew is out of frustration of seeing founders feeling like they had to leave the middle of the country to start their companies because they felt like the access to capital was going to be in the coast. So I think you're absolutely right in that, you know, people that lived in smaller towns or not in Silicon Valley, not in New York, often have to figure out how to do more with less, right? So I appreciate your story as well.
Yeah. And I mean, I did the same thing. I definitely left my town of, or my city of Spokane. There just wasn't really much going on there, but like, what is the startup scene like in Oklahoma?
So it's emerging, I would say. There's a lot of excitement around supporting the startup community. But if I had to categorize it, we're still a startup. The early stages of building the community and the ecosystem. We're still trying to figure out where everyone fits. And we continue to remind people that the only stars of the show or the only leaders in the show are really the entrepreneurs, not necessarily the stakeholders. But anyway, so that's how I would say we're emerging.
Yeah, and I and with that, let's talk about Thunder Launchpad. So, can you kind of describe like what that is and how that process works with the startups?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, 2 years ago, we partner with our NBA team, the Oklahoma City Thunder, to run an accelerator, and we're pretty traditional in the sense of, you know, we run the accelerator as most other accelerators do. We do two cohorts a year, one in the spring, one in the fall. We accept up to 10 companies per cohort, so a total of 20 companies a year. The only thing that I would say we're a little bit different, and there's other accelerators that are nonprofit, but we run it as a nonprofit, so we don't take equity in the companies that go through our program. And we also don't charge them to go through our program. So the benefit there is that companies don't have to dilute equity just to benefit from going through our program. And the reason why we did that is because it was important for us to, as I said, we're in the early stages of developing the community. So for us, it was more important to develop density of startups than it was to, you know, pick winners and losers and just be an investment arm in the community. I feel like the time will come for that. But for now, we've decided to just be founder friendly and focus on helping as many startups as we possibly can. And so the partnership with Thunder is they provide us space to run the accelerator program. So that's actually what's the Thunder Launchpad is. It's a really cool space where we give access to founders to work from. Unfortunately, due to COVID-19, we haven't been able to do that with this current cohort, but it's a pretty cool space that we open it up to the founders in our cohort, but also to alumni. There's a lot of mentors and investors that use the space as well. And the Thunder also helps us with demo day. So we always collaborate. And at the end of the 12 weeks, we introduce the founders to investors, media, and the community overall. So we hosted, traditionally, we've hosted that at the Chesapeake Arena, which is home of the Thunder. This year, we're going to have to do it a little bit differently and do it virtually, but they're still going to be very much involved in helping us with the programming.
And so I know it's nonprofit. So since they're allowing you to use their space, do you guys just not have a lot of overhead? Or if you do have a lot of overhead, like how are you funding this process if no one's paying for anything from the entrepreneur standpoint?
Sure. It's a great question. So we just have a lot of corporate and foundation support. So some of our supporters include obviously the Oklahoma City Thunder, Hogan Taylor, which is a well-known CPA firm here. Google is one of our partners. And then we have a couple of foundations like the Lovick Taylor Family Foundation, which has supported entrepreneurs as long as it's existed. And then we have other foundations like the Inasmuch Foundation and the Oklahoma Business Roundtable. So we get a lot of support from the community stakeholders to be able to run the program.
Very cool. Yeah, I think corporate sponsorships are such a big thing, and startups and both in accelerators, and something I'm definitely working towards. And so that's actually a good question for people listening. So when you approach these corporate sponsorships, like, what do you say? How do you get them involved? Were they already a part of the Thunder? Like, how does it get from point A to now they're putting money into your accelerator?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So the first year, Chris and I put in our own money and our own resources, and we didn't pay ourselves. And we were able to do that because, again, we're not doing this for the money. We did it because we believe in, you know, we're ourselves entrepreneurs and we believe in what we're doing. So the first year, we decided to not fundraise and to really prove people that what we were doing mattered. So year one was very much like a startup. We bootstrapped it. We proved the thesis. We helped. The only sponsor that we had was the Thunder. And that's because from day one, literally one of the Thunder executives, Brian Burns, actually two, and Carlos Kesper, Chris and I went to have multiple coffee sessions and beers, and they bought into the idea from day one. So they were our main partners, but they're primarily in-kind partners, right? So they give us space, and then they host demo day. The rest, Chris and I bootstrapped it and later found an angel. But we used year one to say, listen, we're going to do this whether there's acceptance from others or not, because we believe in it so much, and we're going to let the founders tell their story, and that's going to get us sponsorship year two. And so that was our thesis, and it turned out very well, because what ended up happening is that we hosted cohort one, and then the founders saw the value in it, and then they started telling other people. Then we hosted cohort number two, and really it just grew organically from there. I think that corporate entities started seeing what we were doing. They liked it. They believed in it because the founders were saying that it worked. And that's what got us corporate sponsorships the following year. And now I forgot to say, we even have a grant from the federal government now. But it's taken a while to get there because we didn't want to be the ones telling the story. We wanted the founders to do it. So year one was definitely bootstrapped. And then the following years, we were able to secure those conversations because we had stories to tell.
No, I think that's the best way to do it. You know, if you build it, they will come. And I think from what Farhad just told me, you guys have built an incredible program out there. So that's definitely the best way to spread the word, is just to build a quality product and, you know, start helping people, and karma will come back to you. So that's really cool that, you know, you've been able to grow it so well.
Yeah.
So what is your daily role there? What is it like at Stitch Crew for you?
Yeah. Well, right now with COVID-19, I feel like, oh my gosh, my whole routine and the way I usually operate and produce is completely different. So, you know, when I was at the office, we would get to work, start either building relationships with investors or the community to talk about the startups, or we were recruiting startups for the next cohort, or we were mentoring the startups within the existing cohorts if we were in, you know, in the batch. So it was pretty structured. You know, we had certain days where we do office hours with the founders. We had certain days where we focus on investor outreach. We had certain days where we focus on fundraising for the program itself. Now my day looks like, listen, I get up, I make a cup of coffee. And, you know, before I used to be very much a checklist, knock it off. And now I just, you know, I do what I can to do what needs to be done on a daily basis. But it all evolves around, we're either helping founders or we're building relationships with investors that want to see the deal flow out of our accelerator program.
Very cool. Yeah, I know everyone's pretty much, their daily lives have been changed. Mine is pretty similar, to be honest, which I feel bad for because everyone else has been affected. And I'm kind of just like, I was already working from home anyways, so can't really tell you how my life's changed, but I'm glad you guys were able to still run the core cohort. So are you doing like Zoom meetings now, or what are you guys doing?
Yeah, we do Zoom meetings. You know, we adapt as well because other people rather do, you know, whatever, right? Whatever app they're using, Microsoft Teams or whatever platform they care to use. But yeah, for us primarily is Zoom meetings. We moved all of our meetups with the founders and mentor calls and office hours, we moved those virtually. And yes, our platform of choice is Zoom.
And then do other MBA teams have platforms like this, or is the Launchpad kind of a, I mean, I think I've heard of, I think the Dodgers definitely have an accelerator in LA. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to, is this like a common thing? And then the Thunder were like, oh, we should do this too. Or was it kind of a unique thing when you guys started doing it?
Yeah. You know, I wish Chris was here because he's the one that keeps up more with the sports techs world, but,
oh, gotcha.
I don't know about any other NBA teams, but I do know about other sports, leagues, right? Like you mentioned the Dodgers, there was another one that it was more of an advertising agency that started it, and then they got a sports team to sponsor it. So they did a sports tech. NBC Universal, I think, has another one that's sports tech related. But in terms of a team sponsored, I think you mentioned it, the Dodgers. And again, I'm not sure of others. I will tell you that there's been a few others that have done like internal, like corporate driven accelerators, meaning they manage it internally and it's very much focused on sports tech or hospitality tech. The good thing about our program is that the Thunder and us were very much aligned in the vision. And the vision was for this to be a community-related effort. And so instead of being industry-specific to either sports tech or any other industry, we were going to be industry-agnostic. And we were just going to go after the best founders and the best ideas that we came across. And if we believed in them and if our selection committee believed in them, we were just going to take them on. So even though there are other sports related accelerators, I would say we're unique in that we're not industry specific and we're not limited in that.
And I feel like you're reading my questions because technically I sent them to you, so you would know, but I was going to ask you, you know, is there any sports focus for the Launchpad? Cause I feel like, yeah, like as a company, it would make sense for them to kind of just filter through, you know, whether it's like a VR, AR sports kind of company, and then they can go, oh, we can use this for our, you know, our athletes. So that's cool that you guys kind of just made it agnostic and all that. So, and then how involved are the Thunder? Like, is Chris Paul just coming by and like crossing kids up in the launch pad, or like how does that work?
Yeah. So by the way, even though we're not sports tech related, we have had companies that are, you know, sports tech or within the hospitality and experience, but hospitality field, that have gone through the program. And the way that, why that's very beneficial is because the Thunder does provide a lot of mentorship to the companies that go through the program. So if you're a sports tech, you know, you get a huge advantage in that. You have the executive team at the Thunder mentoring you, right? Like what works, what doesn't work in the industry, what they see versus, you know, versus what the founders maybe have access to. So the way the Thunder works is that they have like assigned mentors to our program from marketing, sales, customer experience, data analytics, PR, you name it. If we need something, they're always willing to do office hours with the founders in our program. So that's kind of the extent. As far as the players, you know, we have had a few players drop by the Thunder Launchpad. But, you know, we always make it very clear to founders that apply to our program, don't expect, you know, to see, you know, players drooling over investing in your startup if that's why you're applying.
Exactly.
don't expect that, because we can't promise that. Yeah.
But in that same breath, though, I've noticed a lot of NBA players specifically getting very involved in tech and startups. And I think it kind of drives from, I've noticed a lot of people a lot of players in the Golden State Warriors, you know, being so close to Palo Alto over there in San Fran. I've noticed a lot of them getting super involved in investing and tech and all that stuff. So I think more and more as time goes on, like professional athletes with all the money they have are going to start getting more and more invested into tech startups for sure, though.
Yeah, 100%. And we have some of those in our networks. What I would say to the founders, though, is just maybe setting the expectation and that, listen, you know, whether it's KD or whether it's Chris Paul, they have their own, hopefully they have their own investment managers or portfolio managers that help them make those decisions. So it's more about setting the expectation that, you know, just because you're at the Thunder Launchpad, you're not guaranteed investment from any players. But we definitely see it, like you do, how players are paying attention to different asset, you know, asset classes from an investment perspective.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I was going to add to the end of that. I was just going to say, but in that same breath, definitely, yeah, definitely let them know, like, you're probably not going to get an investment from Kevin Durant. Like, so don't expect that. But
no, I was just saying you may, but, you know, don't expect it as a guarantee.
Yeah, we're not writing it in a contract for you. Right. But no, I 100% agree. I mean, we actually, we're still working on closing an NFL, pretty big NFL guy. And it was the same thing. I mean, he was definitely into it. And then there was like weeks of investment advisors and all this stuff, and so it's definitely not just them. They've got like a full team, especially if they're a veteran in the you know, in their professional sport. So
yeah.
And then so we'll talk about your I saw one of your TED talks. It was awesome.
Thank you.
Definitely something I support. So what or how often do you do public speaking engagements?
That's a good question. I really have to believe in the platform, and it has to be in my niche, right? So I'm not a public speaker. I'm not out there looking for public speaking opportunities. Usually they approach me because of it's either on entrepreneurship or investment or women in investment and finance. But usually I don't seek those opportunities. So they just, as they come, I would say. So I know that really doesn't answer your question, but I do a lot. I do get approached constantly about being on panels or doing keynotes. And I just try to be careful to really pick the ones that I feel are tied to our mission and what we're trying to do here, because they can also take a lot of time. You know, I try not to get up and just talk off the cuff. If I don't feel like I'm adding value, I usually say no. But yeah, so I do a lot, but
no, I totally agree with that, because like I mean I'm not getting asked like crazy to speak for anything, but I've definitely been asked to like speak at, you know, smaller things. And from conferences I've seen, I'm like, okay, I could have spoken way better than that. But I mean, I feel like personally feel like I have a really awesome story and I have a lot of advice to give, but I feel like my story, as far as my startup goes, isn't, you know, there needs to be a more of a conclusion to it before I feel like I can go publicly speak. Like, I just feel like I've done all the cool things up to the point where we have traction. And it's like, I wouldn't feel comfortable speaking and being like, and here's how to get to the point where you don't have traction yet. So it's like, I feel like I need to have that traction first before I feel comfortable, you know, getting a mic in my hand and going, okay, here's how I did it, you know?
Yeah.
But no, I totally know what you mean. You definitely need to feel comfortable and like feel like you can provide value to people. Otherwise, it's like, what am I doing here?
I would say just the fact that you've gotten to where you are, that has value. So I always actually encourage founders to do share their story, because you never know who you might inspire. You don't have to be already revenue positive or have an exit in your pocket. Your story may impact others.
Don't
be careful online, and I encourage others to always share their story.
Oh yeah, don't get me wrong. I've definitely given little pitches, or I've spoken at like smaller conferences, but I just it's more of like, here's what not to do. Like, here's the mistakes that I've made.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping to eventually have it be like, here's the mistakes that I made, and then here's what went right. You know. So I just I need a little bit more of that conclusion before I feel. And then after that, I'll speak every day. I don't really care, but
yeah, totally.
Absolutely.
The what not to do are often the best.
100%.
Listen,
100%. I can't tell you how many, because I should seriously start charging for consulting, but I just do it for free with my friends that have startups. But I can't tell you how many times I've been on the phone with someone and they've been like, well, you know, here's this idea. We're going to make an app. And I'm just like, okay, well, I just saved you $100,000. That shouldn't be an app. That's a terrible idea. It's definitely a website that should be mobile friendly. Give me $100,000. You just save that money. Like, it's just simple things that I see companies doing all the time that just I went through. Like, my first company, or like our first, the first version of our app should have 1,000% been a website. It should have been mobile friendly. And I would have all that money now that I could spend on my current app. So just certain things like that, I feel like just mistakes I've made along the way that can save people a lot of money and a lot of time are just super important. And it's definitely the what not to do that I feel like usually gives the best, most beneficial advice.
100%.
So in regards to Stitch Crew, so what are the key things that you bring to startups besides like the launch pad and all that kind of stuff? Like, what on like a weekly basis, like what are you and the founding team like providing to these startups?
Yeah, so we try to cover different content every week. So we start from startup, mechanics, like the basics, how to set up a C Corp, to all the way to fundraising. And so we try to divide the program in three different phases. Phase one is, well, let's validate the idea, right? Let's make sure that you're actually solving a problem and that your solution is in fact not just one or two times better than what's already in the market, but that it's 10 times better to make sure that it truly is investable. Or even if you decide not to fundraise, we just want to make sure that it's a proven business model that has legs to it. And then month number two, we focus on like, okay, let's say that that you do have a good idea and that you are the right team to solve it, and say that you can build it. Can you sell it? So then we talk about that. We talk about developing the product. How would you get it into the hands of users and talking to users and the right way to talk to users? And then month three, we focus on fundraising. So we don't introduce fundraising because Chris and I have had companies where we had investors and other companies where we grew through revenue. And we don't believe that one is better than the other. It's ultimately the type of company that you want to build. I think venture capital just helps you expedite it, but it's not necessarily critical to build a high growth company, in my opinion. So we kind of hold off on the fundraising until month three. We rather work with founders that have a solid foundation and then introduce fundraising at the end, as opposed to help create professional fundraisers and then they figure out how to build companies, right? So that's our thesis. And the way we work on a weekly basis with the founders is we have office hours with them. We have one-on-one sessions with them. We try so hard not to be like a, no offense to university run programs, but we're not an educational entity. So we're not, we don't consider ourselves teachers or coaches or anything like that. We're just here to help problem solve. So most of that happens on one-on-one conversations. So we also didn't do a lot of workshops. We literally meet once a week to review the content that we introduce at the beginning of the week via email and videos, and then we discuss it. So I think most of the value comes from the peer-to-peer engagement and founders talking to other founders about the content that we introduce and what they think of it. And then they bring in their other content, and then we just create a conversation. So that's kind of what happens on a weekly basis. We do have more than 100 mentors within our program. So we also make a lot of introductions to founders based on what they're building, based on what industry they're in. We try to make connections. So the goal for us is not only to get the companies in the best shape possible by week 12, but also to have them meet as many people as we possibly can, because that creates the network, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And how many cohorts have you guys had so far?
This is our fifth cohort. So we are actually preparing to have our fifth demo day, which will be our first virtual demo day on May 28th.
And so, well, do you kind of see the virtual demo day as an advantage because now any investor can tune in, or is it a disadvantage because you can't have it in person?
I think there's both. I mean, I think that definitely having it virtual and giving, because of where we are and because of the dynamic that I mentioned and that most fund managers are not located in the middle of the country, it's obviously an advantage that they don't have to hop in the plane and come to demo day. So there's definitely benefit on that. But I also miss the one-on-one, you know, connection of that founders often make meeting people in person. So there's pros and cons, we're actually looking forward to it. Ask me that question after demo day on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, then, it could be a shit show.
Yeah, you know, we work with a lot of other accelerators. We learn from them. We ask them how they did it. There's been several accelerators that have done virtual demo days now. And the conversations are, you know, from what platform they use, how they did it versus how we're going to do it. And so I think we're all just learning.
No, and I would just say, like, because I would be super nervous hosting a virtual demo day myself, but I also get nervous pretty easily. but I would just say, like, just look at like a Jimmy Kimmel or Jimmy Fallon, like how they're doing their live shows. It's honestly pretty shitty. Like, it's just kind of them in their house and they're just kind of talking to the camera. And then people are still watching, people still, you know, are tuning in and no one's complaining. So I would say, like, you know, do your thing, but don't, you know, it's going to, like, who cares? Like, yeah. People, I think there's an expectation that it's not going to be as good as it was in person. And so I think you guys will be just fine, honestly.
Thank you. I appreciate the moral support. We need it.
Absolutely. So COVID-19 aside, what are future plans that you guys have for the program?
Yeah. So we really just want to help founders wherever they are. So I see us hosting more cohorts in the future. I also want to be, you know, Chris and I and Gabby, for that matter, we made the commitment that we really want it to be additive. I read a statistic the other day that there are now more accelerators than there are startups starting. And we never want to be that. Like, we never want to create an industry just to create it. We want to make sure that we're adding value, that the founders see value in our program. And the minute that our services are no longer needed, we'll pivot, just like most business do, right? The pivoting is not just for startup, but throughout the lifetime of your company, you have to know where your company fits and whether or not it's adding value. And so as much as I like to plan ahead, I'm also very realistic in that, you know, maybe 2022, there's not a need for an accelerator in the state of Oklahoma because founders have taken over, hopefully, the ecosystem, and there's so much knowledge and there's so much sharing of that knowledge that maybe there's not a need for an additional accelerator. Maybe there's other accelerators starting. And Chris, Gabby, and I are totally okay with that. We would then pivot to add value some other way. So we try to plan ahead, but not too much, because we know that just like now, right, with COVID-19, things can change in a second, and you just have to adapt and add value.
Absolutely. And with adding value, what do you think the number one thing is that first-time founders are lacking that you feel like you can leave an impact on, and that when they leave your cohort, it'll be a skill that's like completely transformed?
If I had to narrow it to one thing, is that getting them comfortable talking to users, getting them comfortable talking. And when I say talking, maybe it should be more listening, right? Listening to people and what they think, particularly the people they are trying to serve, listening to really how they perceive the problem. Because we as founders can be very stubborn. And, you know, we have it in our head that we know exactly what people need and want and how we're going to solve the problem. And what we end up doing is we end up falling in love with our solution as opposed to the customer and the problem that they're experiencing. So hopefully by the time the founders leave our cohort, we've like preached to them so much that they meet so many people and they pitch to so many people that by the time they leave, they're comfortable doing it and they're comfortable getting feedback from multiple people. And that feedback can be good, bad, or objective, but they're comfortable asking the questions and listening to different perspectives.
Absolutely. And then I want to touch again on your TED talk. It was about, gender and racial inequality and, inequality, yeah. Just in the VC and startup world. And so what do you think, from a startup's perspective, like what do you think needs to happen to take like steps in the right direction for that gap to be, decreased?
So a couple of things. I think that, you know, as a Latina, as a woman, I'm very much aware of the gaps that exist out there, but I don't let them become a crutch. So we need to know what our odds are, and they suck. And we can argue all day whether they should be there or not, or what barriers exist. But at the end of the day, all that we can control is what we do on a day-to-day basis. So to founders of color, to women out there that are listening, I would just say, keep building. Just know your odds, don't let them become a crutch, and just figure problem solve on a day-to-day basis. You can do it, you can figure it out, and you can make it. Even though we have to do it with less, we can still do it. On the other hand, I think that on the investment side, we need to be aware of our own biases and unconscious biases. And listen, we all have them. I have them as well. So we need to be honest with ourselves, and we need to recognize that they exist. We need to make sure that if we're in an investment firm, we need to make sure that our teams are, you know, representative of our country and the citizens in our country. So we need to make sure that our teams are diverse. But not just, I don't mean just, you know, hire associates and have them do deal flow sourcing. I mean, give them the opportunity to make decisions. Give them the opportunity to give you the feedback on the investment decisions. Hire, promote, and, you know, put them on boards if needed to. And then for LPs who invest in funds, I would also encourage them. Part of the problem is that, you know, for 20 years, the people that are writing these checks, they look very much the same. So we need to give opportunity to new fund managers that are people of color or that are women the opportunity to raise funds and start deploying them. Until we do that, we're really not, I mean, yeah, there's going to be a lot more founder. It's already happening. When you look at who's starting companies now, the numbers and the data is already there. Now we need to work on also diversifying the investment, who's writing the checks.
I totally agree. It definitely, I mean, it always sucks, like, you know, seeing, you know, a picture of like the White House board meetings and there's like 30 old white dudes and then like one lady. And there's like maybe some black dude or something like that, but which is literally every single screenshot of the White House of all like for the last couple of years. But no, I think I 100% agree. And I love the crush comment. I'm definitely going to pull that and use that for an intro because I totally agree. Like it, obviously it's a disadvantage and, but I'm not in the same boat by any means. I'm not trying to compare myself, but similar to like the situation you referred to, with your upbringing, it's like, you know, if you have to go through it, you're going to learn more. You're going to feel better about yourself in the end. Like, and you're going to have so many more skills than the people that, like, if I had just been given a check when I first started, first of all, my company would have tanked because I was totally doing the wrong thing. But also I just feel like there were so many things that I had to learn on my own. Mm-hmm. So I totally agree. I love that comment because I think, so many people before you have done it. So it's like, why can't I, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't talk about it or we shouldn't know that it exists. Just let it not become a crutch. And then I would also say, you know, the best thing that we can do as entrepreneurs of color, women, or even like you, you know, rural founders or founders that come from communities that you know, that have limited access, whoever you are, you would then, once you make it, you would then become that example that other people needs to see. So exactly. Focus on your success, focus on making whatever progress you make, share your story. And that's how we collectively change. It's not going to be as fast as I would like it, but we can make dents if we just focus on that.
Absolutely. And I think it's incredible what you guys are doing for sure. And so, are you involved with any startups like back in your hometown or in Mexico in any way, like any sort of like remote advising roles?
Yeah. So, we haven't invested. So Chris and I are also investors, in addition to the accelerator. We haven't invested or have startups that we work with, in Mexico, but we do have a very, good relationship with accelerators in Mexico City who are supporting startups over there. So if they do ever come across a startup that is working on a field where Chris and I can be, and Gabby can be additive, they definitely call us and then we will do virtual office hours or introduce them to investors. So that's kind of how we have the connections is through other accelerators that are doing incredible work down there.
Very cool. And then one last thing here, this has been awesome. What is the best advice you have for an entrepreneur that's new and fresh and like has a really good idea and wants to enter the startup world?
Don't do it for the fame. Don't do it because you're excited. Don't do it because of what you read on TechCrunch or you've seen on Netflix shows. Do it because you're super passionate about solving a problem that you will stop at nothing to solve it. If you're that founder that is really passionate, you'll figure out ways to get where you need to go. But if you really are doing it because you think you're going to be rich soon, don't do it for those reasons. Don't do it because you think it's cool, because it's not cool. In fact, many days is super hard and you're going to want to give up.
Very much not cool sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So make sure that you're doing it for the right reasons. The second thing I would say, if you're doing it for the right reasons, make sure that you get out of your head, because it's going to be super hard. There will be times that you doubt yourself, that you wonder if you're good enough, if you know all the answers, if you know the right people, you know, and you're going to start comparing yourself to founders that are further along than you are. So you need to recognize that those thoughts exist and they're impossible. I mean, I still have very much a lot of insecurities. I just need to recognize that I'm in my head and then I need to get out of it, because sometimes where our biggest limitations are within us. So that's the thing I would say, get out of your head, make sure you're solving a problem that you're really passionate about and get out of your head and out of your way once you do.
Love it. Could not agree more. Erica, this has been so cool. Is there anything you want to plug? I'll be sure to add the links to the episode, but we plug in Stitch Crew or something like that. What are we doing?
Yeah, if you want to plug in Stitch Crew, that would be super great, as well as them. I mean, I don't know when you're going to release it, but if you want to invite people to RSVP for demo day, that would be great. They can,
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll be sure to add that. Email me that link. I'll be sure to add that to the episode.
For sure. I'll send you the invite and it has all the links.
Sweet. I will not be investing because I have $5, but I will definitely be sharing the link. So
perfect.
Erica, this has been really cool. I really appreciate it. Love what you guys are doing at Sitch Crew. And excited to see where you guys go.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you for the opportunity. Any way we can help you or your startup, let us know.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I'm going to push stop recording and then we can touch on that in one sec.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Thanks again to everyone who's listening now for season 3. This isn't a huge podcast by any means, but we just hit another 10,000 downloads for season 2. To be honest, I'm just really glad that people are coming back and listening to multiple episodes and telling me about them. It's just exciting for me. I've been able to meet the coolest people. I've had some of the most incredible conversations, and I've honestly learned a lot. Had it not been for entrepreneurship, I wouldn't have met any of these people. And I can officially say that I've completed over 60 amazing podcast interviews. Let's keep them coming. Don't forget to download the WeStrive app. Leave us 5 stars if you can. And if you're a personal trainer, be sure to sign up at train.westriveapp.com. Thanks again for all your support. Subscribe if you can. And have an incredible week.
WeStrive.